Hey everybody, I'm Chris Bircher and I am the Neurodivergent Professor. Blogging and podcasting and writing articles on my website and a website called Medium about the human condition, our struggles, the extra suffering that we do, and sort of how we can maximize human flourishing and release ourselves from some of these, you know, mostly self-imposed mechanisms that add to our suffering. And that's a lot of what I'm going to talk about today. And you can find all this stuff with the Neurodivergent Professor. It's on YouTube. It's on your favorite podcast host, my website, www.chrisbircher.com, and on the paid, somewhat free and accessible writing website, Medium. You can find what I do. Please, if you like what I'm doing, if you listen to this stuff, I'm a one-man show, and I want to be a part of this, and it's slow, and it's happening, and I'm meeting people, and I'm interacting, but, you know, there's a movement. There's a spiritual, for lack of a better term, movement happening right now, worldwide, where people are looking to have these kind of conversations, to understand themselves as individuals, and then reintegrate ourselves into the collective. And I'm part of that, but this kind of thing is so far below the noise threshold that people are never going to find it unless we talk about it through word of mouth, which is great because it's like homesteading, you know, it's like so analog. I love it. I'm not asking for money. I don't have anything to sell. All I'm asking is that you help make these connections. If you're listening to this, if you hear it, if it matters to you, you know, share it with somebody else. And that's how this is going to roll. And it's funny that I just said threshold, because that's a lot about what I'm going to talk about today. This is episode 167 of the Neurodivergent Professor, formerly Knowledge Plus Experience Equals Wisdom. And what I want to talk about today is something I've literally been thinking about for 20 years. I call it the cumulative stress hypothesis. Briefly, cumulative, it adds up, it gets more, you know, so it's growing. Stress, that could be discomfort, literal pain, suffering, dukkha, anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, you know, fill in the blank, and hypothesis. Hypothesis is, you know, a testable question, right? It's an idea that you propose in a very specific way that allows you to generate data that will either refute or support that hypothesis. It doesn't prove anything. It just sort of points an arrow in one of two directions. Either there's nothing going on or there's something going on. That's a big thing people don't understand about science. You can look at my first episode and a couple other episodes I've done about that if you're interested in more about that stuff. I mean, there's 167 episodes of all kinds of stuff like that. But anyway, I became interested in this from the context of ecology. And I was specifically studying freshwater aquatic ecosystems with a primary focus on the biota in those systems and primarily the fish and the insects. Because those are the ones that, you know, we're more attracted to. It's like this, it's this idea of charismatic megafauna. You know, one of the wisest people I've ever known, the smartest people I've ever known, Bobby Niederlehner, who was the lab director where I got my PhD at Virginia Tech. She never wanted to go on and pursue her own PhD, but she was smarter than anybody that ever went through that system. And she said one time, it's like, if you really want to know how the ecosystems influence biota, you should be studying nematodes. And she had this, you know, perfectly sensible and accurate description about why that was true. And the reason that we didn't study nematodes is because who cares about nematodes? At least fish are fun to angle for, and, you know, insects are cool looking, and that's, you know, they've inspired a lot of like horror movies and you know, anyway. But what I realized, and probably would have become my career guiding question, you know, my piece de la resistance or whatever, like the thing that I did best in my career, would be to study this idea of the cumulative stress hypothesis. And what it basically said was a system, in this particular case, an aquatic ecosystem, can absorb a lot of stress up until some threshold in a non-changing state. And other people have said similar things before. I think maybe some of the laws of thermodynamics and entropy get at the same thing, but, and maybe I was inspired by those. I'm not saying I'm completely original, made this stuff up. You know, we stand on the shoulders of giants. We're inspired by our inspirations, and we move on from there. And so at that threshold, this ecosystem looks the same. Like no critical features of that ecosystems are altered because it can basically absorb the stressors. And those could be like changes in temperature, changes in resource availability, the loss of food, you know, the change in species composition. All these are sort of things that change, that change within ecosystems. But beyond some threshold, the whole system is going to start to change in dramatic ways. It won't deliver the same sort of services, meaning like a forest no longer produces timber for harvest, or a fishery never doesn't have fish in it to catch anymore. And the output is dramatically changes. The energy processing, the very characteristics that define that ecosystems have changed to the point where it's unrecognizable or a completely different thing. But and what we tend to focus on, this is why I thought about this, is like the straw that breaks the proverbial camel's back. We would look at a system and go, oh, everything was fine in this stream until we built houses next to it. And it was the building of those houses that ruined it. It's like, no, there was a whole lot of other stuff going on that we don't understand because we didn't look at it. We didn't look for it. It's just like the human body, right? We can fight off diseases. You know, for like the last week, I feel like I've had a really low grade kind of stomach bug where people around me are like really sick. And I feel like, you know, my cumulative stress was lower than theirs because, you know, I'm doing pretty well with my mental and physical health. I'm sleeping good. I'm eating well. I'm meditating, doing yoga, the things that I know I need to do to attain kind of like a healthy system. So I'm pretty low on the stress. And so when these germs invade my system, I'm either stronger at, this is all hypothetical, either stronger at fighting it off, or for whatever reason, the symptoms are sort of reduced. It's kind of the same thing where if you get the flu vaccine and then you get the flu, your symptoms during the flu are less because you have this, you know, because you had a lower or a higher threshold or whatever. I don't know if any of that's true. It's just, I'm just using it simple for illustrative purposes, that if we can maintain the various insults to a system, the harmful things that can happen from all different kinds of directions, whether that's like in a person, it would be not sleeping as well, maybe not having a good enough diet, maybe being a little bit out of shape, maybe be stressed about all these things accumulate to represent your quote unquote stress or dukkha or whatever you want to call it, or resistance, use whatever word you want. And they can keep you closer to that threshold so that whatever the next thing that comes along is going to push you over it. And you're going to be like really sick or whatever. And I wonder, to a certain extent, you can extend this model of thinking into like cancer. You know, does cancer arrive because you're spending all this time right at your threshold? You know, and it's just like you're just waiting for whatever it is to come in. You know, I often wonder if that's not part of it. Now, the problem with that is you can't study it, or it's really hard to study. And that's why I wanted to make it my career. And then I realized that, yeah, I was studying this in an aquatic ecosystem, and it made a lot of sense. But then I started, as I became obsessed with personal growth, and to the extent that I kind of wish I would have gotten a PhD in like anthropological, ecological psychology, you know, I could really start bringing in these different things and thinking about the human emotional, spiritual system, the soul, I don't even know what you call it. I never thought about it in words before, as being the same way. We can sort of accumulate stress, which affects our capacity to sort of navigate the evolution of our individual soul. And if we're aware of it, and it requires all this other stuff, but if we have too much stress in that system, we're unable to do any of that stuff because we are preoccupied by being anxious, being sick, you know, whatever it is. There's the same thing in the human system. And it's funny, I use that as an example. So you already get what I'm trying to say. It's kind of like, then once that awareness hits, and I call this the practice, we come up with a way of sort of managing our human system. And ideally, this extends to human communities too, right? But we got to get ourselves first. I think the cumulative stress hypothesis could also be applied to civilization, and that we're always operating beyond the threshold. And that's why we see things like famine and inequality and social injustice and racism and war, you know, because we're falling apart. The system is no longer healthy. It doesn't no longer resembles the healthy, balanced, supportive, cooperative, human, biological, universal system that maybe used to be or is possible, because we're operating outside of the realm, beyond the threshold of that stress. But anyway, that's another, you know, the cumulative stress hypothesis as applied to human civilization is another issue. I'm just talking about individuals for now. Maybe that will be the follow-up episode. We'll see. So our MO, our purpose of life, becomes managing our system so that it's under that threshold, being aware of where that is, and knowing that the closer we get to it, the more, you know, aware we need to be that we need to, like, fix something because we're starting to boil over. You know, it's like maintaining water at 100 degrees C without adding that extra energy that it boils. But really, you want to maintain it more like at 70. You know, if there's a continuum before this, I don't know what the figure looks like, but there's probably a whole lot of reality underneath the threshold. And then, I don't know, some space on top of the threshold. This is where we spend most of our time, I would argue. But there's a continuum between zero stress and stress that's close to the threshold. Where you want to manage that, I don't know. I would think that if you were at zero stress, you're probably not having much of a life and having much experience. You know, you've got to take some risks. You're going to put yourself out there. You push your comfort zone. Sometimes you get burned. Sometimes you retreat. You know, the comfort zone could also be layered in here somewhere, because that's also very much a threshold, except in the comfort zone context, the threshold beyond which is growth. But the cumulative stress hypothesis is different in that the threshold demarcates disaster, right? Or shift in a negative direction. But maybe one could look at this as being like, you know, the cumulative growth hypothesis, and flip that on its end and say that, you know, you're, instead of looking at it as stress, look at it as this sort of opportunity and open-mindedness and those sort of things, and safety and lack of fear and courage push you beyond some threshold on the other side of which is growth and prosperity, right? That's an interesting thing I hadn't thought about until just now. But we'll also table that as maybe a third episode in this series. And so what do we do? You know, first of all, it's one more example, and that is what I think is a Buddhist, but it could be just a Native American parable or fable or whatever, of the second arrow, where someone is walking through the forest and they're hit by a first arrow and it does some damage to them and it's painful. But then they sit there and beat themselves up for being so stupid, for being vulnerable to that arrow. And now it's created all these other problems. And then they add the second arrow to make the pain even worse, and the third arrow, and how what their family is going to think about them, and what an idiot they are, and how they're going to be, you know, abandoned from their village. And, you know, the third and fourth and fifth arrows that we add mentally to this first arrow that was a very unfortunate and sucky sort of situation. But there's no need to attach to beating ourselves up after that. And in reality, what we need to do is go, that was an unfortunate event. I'm still a good person or whatever. So that's something that we talk about in fables. You know, this is a thing. The fact that we add unnecessary stress in there, that sort of gets us closer to the threshold than maybe normal life would, by creating stories, by dreaming, as the Toltecs would say, by predicting the future, which I talked about in the last episode, and by beating ourselves up and adding all these unnecessary stressors. So we want to manage our lives for minimal stress. And a big part of that is understanding, like, what I think about a lot lately, what is sort of like a normal amount of human suffering or dukkha, some shit in life that's just hard. That's going to add to the stress that accumulates. But then there's a whole nother set of stuff that we make up and add in our brains with worry and things like that, that add to this too, that we really frankly don't have room for. And especially in a world that's sort of crumbling before us, like, we don't need to focus on worry about the future when there's enough to worry about right now, kind of thing. Maybe that isn't a great example, but so, just like I've said before, I mean, this is all part of this emerging more finite problem, which is just general discomfort at sort of the individual level, but then all of these huge problems like climate change and hunger and war and social inequality, all those issues too. The first step is awareness. And that's a big one for at least two reasons. One, not everybody is self-aware or wants to be self-aware or sees the benefit of being self-aware or has even ever thought about it. And that's legit. Maybe people don't want to do this in their lifetime. It's as much as I want it to be. It's not my purview or role to shake people out of that and make them be aware. I can't do that. I want it for everybody because I honestly think it is the critical gateway to anything else positive. But maybe you're in such a state of bliss based on ignorance that it's going to do you more damage than good. I don't know. I certainly don't want to be responsible for that. But I wish. And so I think once you become aware, either serendipitously or because you're in your fifth iteration of reincarnation and you've just reached that point of the continuum of enlightenment or whatever, or because some trauma happened and you find yourself suddenly wondering what the fuck is going on and you want to do something about it. And that's where I think we get help. We can do a lot of this work on our own. We can read, we can research, we can experiment. But I think something like therapy or church or some communal interaction in a mentorship situation where somebody who's further along the path can sort of fast track you, you know, to a point that getting help is going to be a very beneficial part of the process that comes after awareness. And again, some of this can just be self-help. I think there's a lot to be done there where we start to understand the difference, for example, between the self-inflicted arrows, the self-inflicted stress and anxiety, the unnecessary worry that I talked a little bit about in episode 166, where we think we worry and that keeps us safe. You know, that's really not true. And so if that worry is contributing to this budget, it's almost like we have a stress budget. And you got to go through an analysis of your household, which is great because it brings the echo. You know, it's like echo spirituality in the sense that ecology is the study of your home, which is the earth, or economics is the study of your home, which is your finances for your home. You know, there's an element of that where, you know, you figure out what you're spending all your stress allocation, which is the amount below the threshold, on, and you say, you know what, this really isn't something I need to worry about. Like, you know, I can have a minimum amount of worry about how my kids are going to be as adults, but I can't do anything about it. The serenity prayer, you know, give me the ability to know the difference. And this is what I'm talking about, knowing the difference between the suffering that is just part of being human that you're going to have to deal with no matter what, and that and to the extent that dealing with it will actually reduce other suffering, you know, having a plan for your death, for example, so that your kids don't have to suffer will bring you peace of mind. Having a retirement account investment and saving money will make you relax a little more potentially about the future, things like that. And then knowing just what's silly, like, you know, under a broad spectrum, like caring what's happening to celebrities, like being upset because Kim Kardashian broke up with Kanye or whoever or whatever, like probably not the biggest deal, or getting really worked up and having your blood pressure go up and causing yourself the potential for heart disease when you get so worked up about people cutting you off in traffic or living in a high stress environment. You know, I think about like working on Wall Street, you know, or living in having a job that's really high pressure that leads you to have family stress and not sleeping and things like that. Like, figuring that out for yourself and your own individual and familial stress budget. And then I wonder to what degree, and I don't know if this is static or dynamic, like where that threshold falls, you know, do some of us have unnecessarily low tolerance to stress and therefore like a smaller budget? And can we, through these same sort of things, meditation and diet and mindfulness and exercise, can we maximize where that threshold falls? I don't know. I don't know that we can know that or can really, I wouldn't say that I advocate or recommend for worrying about where that is. It's just knowing that you're under it and that you're that you have some buffer and some safety in there, right? Because that's going to decrease the probability of a blow up. And I wonder to what extent in the neurodivergent world, this isn't what we talk about with autistic meltdowns. You know, we can absorb, this is where it comes from. In ecology, we have this idea of disturbance. So disturbance is when, what I'm talking about here, like the nature of a system changes because it's this threshold has been passed. And that disturbance is sort of the stress I'm talking about. And so what we will say is that, you know, a system can absorb so much stress before it will have some reaction. Yeah, that's what I was trying to think about before. But that sort of threw me off from what I was talking about. I think the point is that the farther away we are from the threshold where the system is going to change, the better off we are. But it's also a balance with what I mentioned before of not limiting our life experiences or sort of like not living enough to satisfy our basic needs, right? There's risk associated with life and there's suffering that's going to happen whether we like it or not. You know, the very least of which is that all cells are born to die, therefore our life is short and we're going to experience trauma and grief and death. That's going to lead to suffering. Now, how we deal with that, how we anticipate that, the degree to which we think about it, in the interim period before it even happens, all that stuff leads to the model of stress and the system changing. There's definitely a lot going on here. And I appreciate you listening to me talking about it. And hopefully it's some benefit to you. And I'm going to talk about it again in the future. So I think if we look at life and the practice as maintenance of our human systems as individuals and collectively, but again, collectively is a future endeavor. We got to figure out ourselves first as maintaining our system to minimize stress. But also realizing that some stress is just going to be there and we're not going to be perfect and we're not going to get zero and we don't want to get zero. We're not even worried about where zero is. What we're concerned with is that we don't go over the threshold. You know, it's like the Incredible Hulk, right? Don't make him so angry that he turns into the Incredible Hulk. And so the way that we do this is learn to identify what's the important and necessary suffering that we can't avoid, or at least be able to discriminate between that and the sort of extemporaneous and unnecessary elements so that we understand what's going on. And then again, that takes self-awareness and attention and intention and work and effort and practice and probably getting help from other people and figuring out how this interacts with the important people in your lives. And then I think the wisdom of the Buddha and of the Tao come into play here about not attaching and reminding ourselves that we don't have to stress just because we're alive. And in fact, minimizing that stress, even though it may seem irresponsible, you know, not working 60 hours a week may seem not successful, not doing a bunch of social things that you don't really want to do. Maybe even going to church that are stressing you out, but you think you're supposed to do it. You know, looking at your belief systems, questioning them, determining whether or not you consented to them in the first place, taking these inventories and going through these things and letting go of, detaching from the things that you put in this other pile of things that don't matter as much but may contribute to your stress. That sort of, you know, the Toltecs call it the taking of the personal inventory. That is a critical second or third step in this process. And then sort of to not do in a Wu Wei Taoism sort of spirit, not in a lazy, I'm not going to worry about this thing, because I think all of us that are hypervigilant, especially neurodiverse, we don't have to worry about whether or not we're going to worry about something. We're not going to become these ignorant, lazy thing, entities, right? Irresponsible. We have this hypervigilance, right? We can sort of chill out a little bit. We're still going to be more vigilant than the average person. I think that's a real concern that we can need to let go of. So letting go, being in the now, unattaching, are all much more complicated than I'm making them here. I'm drastically oversimplifying things, but they're all tools that are going to help manage this. And even when we do things that may appear lazy or counterintuitive or counterproductive, or that go against the definition of society's definition of success, because we're doing it with the intent of maintaining a healthy human ecosystem, if we will, it trumps all that other stuff. It's more important to keep yourself from blowing up, and keeping yourself below your threshold of cumulative stress. That is the mission. And those other missions are secondary, right? That's how we can, just a way to excuse your behavior and find your own way into accepting that you're not failing, because it's a real thing. Cool. That's a really good start on something that's been brewing for a long time. I appreciate your attention. Share this with other people. Do all the things that you can do if you feel compelled to be a part of this. I'm Chris Bircher, the Neurodivergent Professor. This has been episode 167, The Cumulative Stress Hypothesis, Part 1. I'll see you guys next week. Take it easy.